This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
We're halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Great to be back here with you. I'm struggling, as if you couldn't tell, but we'll make it through. Just 2 hours left of the program. I'm Woodsy, that's Paul Rindel, the executive producer, Aztec for Life. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, was at the game last night, and I just donated to the Mesa Foundation. Ben, Ryan, let us know. Aztec Link is football. Mesa Foundation is the basketball-specific NIL. So I just donated.
You're now a program supporter.
Correct.
Fantastic.
Correct. I need my ass kissed a little bit by somebody up there.
I saw J.D. Wicker last night.
Maybe Ben. How'd you get in here?
Ready to give you a call. Thank you for your support of the program.
You get them media tickets, Ben? I thought I put the old kibosh on that. I guess not. I'm going to have to make some phone calls and get out of here. Yeah, done. I just donated. So what happens now? I was looking at the Mesa.
They now can keep Pharrell Compton, whereas before they were not able to. You have made the difference, I'm sure.
He's got a little envelope in his locker when he gets there.
It'd be fun if you could get, if you could go player specific.
From Woods.
Because it did ask you which you would like to, men's basketball, women's basketball, whatever. And you select and whatever. And it'd be fun if you could do by player. I mean, we raised money. We gave Steve Sugimoto, who was Aztec golfer. We were his only NIL sponsor. We got him some merch.
I'm not sure we went through the proper legal channels on that one.
No, we absolutely did not.
We definitely didn't.
I know for sure.
But.
So I got the emails about it.
For $50,000. If we had that kind of money, this would be great. For 50 grand, we could have gotten all the Final Four benefits, two tailored Aztec Blazers. Now, I would take one. And you let you two fight over the other one.
Signed, that's an easy one. I went to the school.
That's true. Yeah, you get it.
Ben. Sorry, I don't get a blazer.
No. Because I'm giving the money. Because you're not getting 50 grand.
That's fair.
We'll buy you a Pomona one.
Signed team basketball. Four tickets to Aztec's midseason luncheon. I don't really like luncheons. Four tickets to exclusive invitation-only top-of-the-key preseason celebration. Early bird VIP reception. Dinner with student athlete of your choice. That'd be a tough call.
Ooh.
Pharoah, Miles Byrd, Magoon Gwath would be amazing.
B.J. Davis was he's a sharp kid,
Dude,
I was listening
man.
To him last night talking after the game. I'd sit down for dinner with B.J. Davis.
Well, and then you get the private dinner with Coach Dutcher.
Wow.
And they, look. Dutch, dinner's going to be your second. Relax, okay?
Sounds hungry.
You're starving.
Open up for the choo-choo train.
How pissed would J.D. Wicker be if he saw this morning come through? $50,000 donation from Stephen L. Woods. Shoot a text like, all right, I'm ready. Whenever you're ready, let's get this thing going. I wish I had that kind of money to play with. Us at the dinner on the diamond, buying our own table.
We really need to get Adam and Michael to up our budget.
That's a good point.
That would be.
I mean, there are some media properties out there that do have that kind of fun money to play with.
Yes. Yes. We're not one of them.
We're not one of them yet.
No, we are not one of them. But anyway, so I was like the rest of the world, I think, on Friday. was able to weasel out of Belmont Park with my kids on Friday. It was very cold, windy, and I lied through my teeth, and I told Bo that the laser tag had been rented by a company, and they're going to use it for a corporate event, and so we'd have to go next day.
It's an elaborate lie and excuse.
You know how kids are. They remember everything. So the minute I picked them up, we going to laser tag? I got some bad news. He goes, no, we're not going. I go, we were totally going to, but this company rented. I have a friend that works there, which is true. And she said a company rented it out for a corporate event. So we couldn't even if we went, we wouldn't be able to go. But here's the deal. We'll be there tomorrow when it opens. And we were, and we did. And he had a blast. So Friday night rolls around. I got the kids all showered, fed. where three of us are laying in my bed, and I go, oh, yeah, the fight, the Netflix fight. And I start scrolling Twitter, and I start seeing, you know, all of these people complaining about the streaming issues on Netflix. And I couldn't relate. My Netflix was humming right along. No problem. My kids were into it. They really like to beat the crap out of each other. So they love to fight.
But they're not sanctioned.
They're not sanctioned.
The way that boxing match was sanctioned.
So we watched the first fight, and it was pretty good. We watched the second fight, and it was pretty good. And we bailed for a while. Then we came back to the women's fight. And that was legitimately one of the best boxing matches I have ever seen in my entire life. I couldn't believe the brutality.
If the night had ended there, it
was a success.
Feels like, I mean, if you hadn't been expecting Tyson Paul, that was a really good night.
Correct.
Of boxing and, you know, stage and spectacle.
But then my Netflix started to get really squirrely. Really squirrely. And I started to have that panic thing of like, I'm missing out. And I kept searching my brain for why I cared so much because, you know, it's Mike Tyson at 58 years old and it's Jake Paul at 27 years old. And I'm like, Mike doesn't have really a puncher's chance, I don't think. I mean, I think he's just going to be old and a little bit run down. But I had this weird thing about like FOMO that I don't really get. I don't really get FOMO. Like, Paulie last year or 2 years ago in the playoffs was down in the clubhouse celebrating with the Padres, and I didn't have FOMO. I was like, oh, good for him. I'm happy I was at home. I was so upset that I couldn't get my Netflix to work for this dumb fight. And finally it worked, and I watched the fight, and it was just unresolved. Nothing really happened. You did kind of feel like, I feel like they were taking it easy on each other. I've heard that
a lot of people think it was staged, rigged, whatever you want
to call it. Yeah, whatever you want to say. I kind of felt like Tyson could have taken some shots and didn't. I certainly felt like Jake Paul could have taken some shots.
There was like one or two clips going around, and I saw one of them where like Tyson kind of hit him with a jab, and you can't really read Jake Paul's lips or totally accurately decipher what he was saying, but it was kind of a like, hey, what are we doing here, man?
Yeah, that was a little rough.
That wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, it's not part of the plan here, and I don't necessarily.
Jake Paul said, like, I didn't want to embarrass the guy, didn't want to hurt him or anything. I'm like, yeah, they just wanted to make, he said something along the lines of, I don't have the exact quote, but it was like, I wanted to make it last eight rounds.
Yeah, I wanted it to go the
and
distance.
Like, okay,
which
this was just a money grab.
It was a total money grab.
We all should have known that if he didn't.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I went into that fight knowing kind of what it was, but still was panicked that I couldn't get it. What is that? Like, what is it?
Well,
like,
you know, we talked about it yesterday, but it's the one thing that Twitter is still good for, and that is when we're all watching the same thing at the same time. And what we really crave as a sports fan is being part of a community. And there was a community on Friday night of all of us watching the same thing at the same time, complaining about the same issues. We love being able to share our complaints with people who are sympathetic to those same complaints. Yeah, you're having Netflix streaming issues. I am too. Let's talk about it together. And that truly is community in a way that you didn't have when, you know, before social media necessarily. Yeah. You didn't have that watching a game at home. That was an isolating experience.
It's
just watching a sporting event by yourself at home. But with social media, it's now a community experience, especially for a big event like that.
Which is such a double-edged sword, because I think about during baseball season, you know, Schulte goes to the bullpen, brings in a guy gives up a three-run homer. And what do you see? Idiot. You should have gone to this guy, right? Like, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, when Jackson Merrill hits a walk-off home run, we're all together, hell yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's good and bad. I mean, it can drive you crazy. I try not to engage much with the in-game, game-to-game decision-making anymore because, well, there's 162 of them. There's a billion decisions that go into it. You can really – I've done that. I've gone whole seasons where I argued with every single person online that was made or wasn't made, and it'll just drive you crazy. But that night, there was this sense of why are all of – we're all morons for watching this fight. And, in fact, the people that I saw tweeting – about what morons we all were, I was like, easy, edgelord, relax, I get it. Like, you're too cool to watch this fight. I had to see it for whatever reason. I had to be there watching it.
I disagreed. I, and you know, I wasn't trying to be a contrarian necessarily, but I fully enjoyed the experience. Now, I went in with modest expectations.
Yeah. I think the woman's fight really helped.
Absolutely was part of my enjoyment. But
they were great fights.
I wanted there to be an off-the-rails moment. There was when Mike Tyson's son interviewed him.
And his butt cheeks.
And his butt cheeks came out. That was an off-the-rails moment.
I love you, Dad. Know. I love you, too. And he walks away, and his bare ass was just...
I wanted to see some trolling and, Jake Paul coming out with In the Air Tonight and Hangover.
Really good.
It's like,
he's a marketing wizard.
He is. I got what I was coming for. I wasn't coming for a high-quality boxing match. They're not high quality boxers. There's a guy who's 30 years past his prime and a guy who's never really been a prime boxer. He's a social media star. If you went for a great boxing match, you actually got one. It just wasn't those two guys. You got the two women.
You got a couple.
A heck of a boxing match, and then you got the spectacle and everything else.
How about the first fight with the Bollywood star that flips the guy around and starts humping him up against the thing? I was like, this is fantastic. I'm all in on this whole thing. It was great. It was great. It was a really good night of fights.
I thought it was actually, a pretty good night. Now, do I want to see it again? No. No. I have no interest in seeing it again.
Let's make this very clear. I don't ever want to see Mike Tyson in a ring again. I've already seen Evander Holyfield talking about a rematch. I cannot watch those two geriatric dudes beat each other. It would be like our dads fighting, Ben. I mean, it is horrible. Like, Evander Holyfield can't hear. He's not all there anymore. I don't want to see them in a ring like it's abuse. That's abuse. If we do that and we pay money, we are
sick.
You're sick. You're sick if you want to see Tyson and Holyfield go at it again. You are a sick person.
Did you not get chills when the ring announcer introduced the baddest man on the planet?
I absolutely
Iron
did.
Mike Tyson. That's what the night was about.
It
wasn't about the quality of the fight. If you thought the night was about the quality of the fight, that's on you. That's on you.
Satan's Blowfish says, do you want to see more of the same kind of spectacles? I absolutely do not. I do not. If Jake Paul wants to be a boxer, then he needs to start fighting boxers.
It's this thing, I don't like Jake Paul. We were all rooting against Jake Paul.
Sure.
You kind of felt problematic either way on Friday night. But if he wants to go up against, like, Canelo, I'm paying if it's pay-per-view. I'm logging into whatever streaming service it's on because I want to watch Canelo whoop his ass.
Speaking of Canelo, I got a text yesterday from our beloved hillbilly friend that works at Encinitas Ranch. Guess who was playing Encinitas Ranch yesterday? Hey, man, look who's up here. Canelo. I said, really? Yeah, he said he loves our greens. Yeah, they called me to see if I could get him on. I said, no problem. Our boy Foster got Canelo on Encinitas Ranch yesterday. Got a picture with him, the whole bit.
That's fantastic.
Apparently he's
pretty good stick.
He's madly in love with golf.
All right.
Madly in love with golf. So, yeah, there you go. A little Canelo action for you. But I don't want to see any more of these. I don't need to see Mike fight again. One cool part was this. My kids, or Bo mostly, because he's really into sports. And Taylor's just into fighting. But Bo wanted to know, like, what's Mike Tyson's bit? Like, what's the history? And I go,
he's got a biting fixation.
He does, much like myself. So I open YouTube and I Google Mike Tyson's top 25 knockouts. And Bo and I sat there and watched it. And it was just like this. Oh my God. Like, you forget what a force he was. And to see him like that was a little sad.
They also picked a good night for it.
Perfect night.
Just was the perfect night for, everyone. Holidays are coming up, so no one really wants to necessarily go out and do a ton. There wasn't anything else really on. It was the perfect night to do a spectacle like that. But it's a one-off, and I definitely do not want to see them chasing part two, part three, whatever else.
I feel like they've already set it up for Mike Tyson, who said he's not necessarily done fighting yet.
He
challenged Logan Paul in the ring, and Logan said, mother effer, I'll kill you. And you're like, oh, great. Now here it comes.
Man. Yeah, it's made me sad.
Did you find yourself in the first, like, maybe one or two rounds, though, going, Tyson doesn't look that bad.
This is a good point. Brian says, if you guys watched the Netflix episodes leading up to the fight, if you had, you might have been expecting something different. I think that's a really good point. I saw a lot of people saying, bro, when you watch Tyson train, it wasn't this dance around, stick and move, avoid, you know, avoid the jab. It was like Bulldog Mike Tyson. And so, yeah, I think that probably disappointed a lot of people. I didn't watch
that. Roy Jones Jr. said it the whole fight. He goes, I don't like his legs.
I don't like his legs.
Look at his legs. I don't like the legs.
Well, I thought Rosie Perez was an interesting
choice.
She's
phenomenal. I thought she was phenomenal.
Yeah.
She's been doing boxing for like 20 years.
Has she? I had no idea.
I hadn't either, but it was a surprise to me, and it wasn't an unpleasant surprise.
What is it, Quahog?
I wasn't even listening for the commentary. It was just like you'd see a left hook get hit, and you just hear, oh!
Yeah.
You knew it was Rosie.
Yeah, she was like, that's true. That's true. I just hear her like weighing it. It was so good.
I was asking around. I asked some buddies, like, oh, yeah, she's been doing this for like 15, 20 years.
Had no idea.
I was like, I didn't know that because I was like, I need more of it.
I'd like to see those women fight again. It was one of the best fights I've ever seen.
I think they should. I mean,
and I
do you agree with everybody else? Miscarriage of decision?
Yeah, 100%. What did she land? 100 more punches?
As Paulie
or something?
Said, I've watched like 5 boxing matches ever, but all of a sudden I'm an expert on boxing scoring.
Yeah.
And that was the. That was the biggest crime in the history of boxing, that Amanda Serrano did not win that fight.
Dominic, sometimes when you win, you actually lose. Sometimes when you lose, you actually tie. It's absolutely brilliant. The thing that I was like, why do they keep complaining about these headbutts? Well, I don't really see anything intentional. And then they would slow it down, and you see her be like, scrooge.
Well, I mean,
right
under
the gash of the eye.
I was texting a buddy who's much more into MMA and boxing and all that. And he goes, it looks dirty. You can debate whether or not it is dirty. It's a tactic.
It's a tactic.
A style of boxing. It wasn't intentionally, like, she wasn't just reaching back and just trying to headbutt Amanda Serrano. But it is part of her style.
She was
leading with her head.
Not necessarily headbutting.
But Serrano should have
known
that because it's very well known that that's part of Katie Taylor's style.
Can you really avoid it? Even if you know it. I mean, if the other person's going to do it, you still have to. You're boxing.
I got physically exhausted watching them.
Oh.
I can't believe it went the distance. And then the flurry at the end of it, I was like, how are they standing? Where's your question? Say you're one of those girls, or you say one of the guys before, the match before. Good fights, hard fights, you're beating them. What do you do after that fight? When I go home from work here today, I'm going to go get in bed. I'm exhausted.
I was thinking about that.
What do you do? Do you go out for drinks? You go out for dinner? Do you go back to your room? Let me get a quick shower, and then I'll meet you guys down in the lobby. What do you
go
do?
Go grab a table. I'll be down at the club.
Or are you in?
I'm sure they probably go out with an entourage somewhere and have a dinner. And
aren't you
something.
In the bathroom vomiting with a massive headache and hemorrhaging from all parts of your body?
Yes.
How do you possibly go? Yeah. All right. Where are we going? All right. I'll see you down there. Let's go. We got VIPs.
I'm playing a 40-minute basketball game tonight. The idea of going anywhere other than a shower in my bed afterwards is awful. And that's not getting my ass kicked. Repeatedly for 20 minutes.
So you go straight to the ice bath, right? You feel a little bit better, but you can't feel that much better. You just got pummeled for 30 minutes, right? Or 24 minutes.
Maybe you're just on adrenaline. You don't really even feel it until the next day or something. You just wake up like a truck hit you.
It did make me want to follow along with Ramos and Barrios, and it made me want to follow along with the two women as well. Serrano and
Katie Taylor.
Katie Taylor. They were just incredible. So that's what we spent our Friday night doing, man. But I felt weird being so into it. That's what it is.
All right. Speaking of things you also missed yesterday, at the very end of the show, the Baseball Hall of Fame announced the ballot for 2025 that's going out.
Off-season banter, baby.
Paulie and I did our quick reaction, our yeses and nos, but we were both curious how you would vote.
Rapid fire.
So we're going to rapid fire with Woods today on the 2025 Baseball Hall of Fame ballot that came out yesterday. We'll get to that coming up next with Ben Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So yesterday, Paulie and I just went through alphabetically the ballot for the Baseball Hall of Fame that was released yesterday. But now that we've got Woods back, wanted to get his opinion, and I want to do it a little bit differently this time. I want to start, Woods, with just the newcomers to the ballot.
Okay.
The guys who are first-year candidates for the Hall of Fame.
So I've done no research, by the way.
That's fine. We didn't either. We were just kind of just gut feeling on each of these guys. And, you know, if you want to give us a comment or two, that's fine. But here are the newcomers on the ballot in alphabetical order, but first-timers, you know, trying to get to Cooperstown. Carlos Gonzalez.
No.
Curtis Granderson.
No.
No Grandy man for you. Felix Hernandez.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
100%.
Now, I think Paulie and I both agreed on yes, but we thought probably
might
not
take him a while.
Probably not going to get in the first year.
He better.
You think he should?
Absolutely.
Filthy.
Adam Jones.
Sorry.
Two fat bastards.
Yeah.
I had the same reaction.
Payback's
well.
A mother.
I feel like I really should say yes for everything that he's done, but
he posted something on his Instagram stories like, oh, S word? Like, he was not even expecting to be nominated or, you know, on the ballot.
That's a pretty cool honor to be nominated.
Ian Kinsler.
No.
Sure. Russell Martin.
No.
Brian McCann.
No.
Dustin Pedroia.
God. I say yes, but everyone tells me I'm wrong. But
I think you're wrong.
I know.
Okay.
He was.
I said he was. I was very close.
Yeah. He probably won't get in, but like in my mind, I'm like, oh God, yeah.
He'll get enough votes to stay on the ballot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just need 5% to go forward.
God, he was great.
Hanley Ramirez.
Man, I think he's one of those guys that when he burst on the scene, I went, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, but I don't think he did enough.
No. Unless you have a chance to Pedroia.
Very talented. Yeah.
I mean, all these guys are talented.
Yeah.
Fernando Rodney?
No.
No. CC Sabathia?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe first ballot even.
Maybe.
Ichiro Suzuki?
No brainer.
The debate yesterday was he should be unanimous, right?
Yes.
You cannot not vote for Ichiro.
Yeah.
He'll join Mariano.
Whoever does should lose their voting rights.
Kurt said, yikes, who made this list? I think it's the
Baseball Hall of Fame
made the list. Cooperstown.
And these are guys who are eligible 5 years, you know, retired, whatever, the first time eligibility. Troy Tulowitzki.
No. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. If he stayed healthy, no question. He was always hurt.
And the legendary Ben Zobrist.
Absolutely not.
Oh, no. Right, so Ichiro, definitely.
CC,
King Felix. Very likely. King Felix, and you've got some Dustin Pedroia love for the new class here. All right, then there's the holdovers. Billy Wagner is in his 10th year.
That's insane to me. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
He was so close last year, just a couple of votes short. He's 73.8%. He needs 75%. I would think, knowing that this is your last chance to vote for him, probably a couple of writers will go, all right, I'll push him over the top this year. Andrew Jones in his 8th year.
God, he's another one I feel like he should be.
61.6% of writers do agree. It's not as though no one thinks he's a Hall of Famer. Most people think he's a Hall of Famer. Remember that.
I say yes.
You need more than most people to think you're a Hall of Famer to get in the Hall of Fame. You need 3/4 of the writers to think you're a Hall of Famer. Most people think he's a Hall of Famer, but he's not in yet, and he's getting down to his last 3 years on the ballot.
Margie says, I'm surprised they haven't added Paul Skeens to the list
already.
Yeah,
they would if they could.
Carlos Beltran's coming back.
Say yes.
Okay. You would agree. 57.1% said yes last year as well. So most people think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get
to the ringleader of the Houston stuff. Going to keep him out?
Maybe. Maybe.
I mean, that's probably why he hasn't gotten in yet. Because it only takes a few.
Yep.
I mean, and then there's the guys who are stuck at 1/3 of the vote and will always be. A-Rod.
Yes.
And Manny.
Yes.
But they're both stuck at basically 34 and 32% and not really moving off of those figures. After that, I don't think anyone else is probably going to get in. Chase Utley maybe has the best chance in his second year. He got 28.8% in his first year. He could climb up the ranks over the next few years and get a little bit closer. It's certainly not going to happen this year, I don't think, but he had the best first-year showing of guys who didn't get in last year.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
About him.
Omar Vizquel?
No.
No. And then the rest of them, I don't think so. Bobby Abreu?
No.
Jimmy Rollins?
No.
Andy Pettit? Paulie and I actually were both okay with Andy Pettit maybe getting in, but he's not going to make it.
I loved Pettit.
Then Mark Burley, K-Rod, Torrey Hunter and David Wright.
No. All right. Hall of Fame talk. Ben Woods.
Good quick segment filler for you.
Like it.
All right. I know that some people weren't with us earlier in the show.
Are we going to cry and whine again?
No, we're actually going to look ahead to what we're going to be crying and whining about tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
The manager of the year. Selection.
Tomorrow?
Well, we'll be crying and whining about it tomorrow.
Got it.
It's today.
It's today.
Tomorrow morning, we'll probably be crying and whining about it. But we can take a little bit of a look ahead.
We do it now, and then we can just replay it totally tomorrow. We can start a little late.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Coming up next with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Well, wherever Jackson Merrill is, and he was in San Diego yesterday, I hope he has a really good day today.
Me too.
Because you cannot take the kind of season he had and the contributions he made to the San Diego Padres. Whatever the writers say, and again, you know, they're entitled to their opinion, as wrong as we think it may be. Jackson Merrill was fantastic for the San Diego Padres and deserves at least all of our praise this morning for what he did for the team, for us as fans this year. Don't care if he's not the National League Rookie of the Year. He's our Rookie of the Year.
Oh, no question. No question. And so much more. He's our Silver Slugger. He's our little Silver Slugger.
He's an all-MLB center fielder, yep. Second team.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Jackson Merrill.
Hi, Jackson. Yeah, he's added to the trophy case. Not the trophy he wanted to put up this year, but that's really what inspires him and motivates him. And I love that in a player, man. I mean, individual accomplishments are great, and those guys should get them. It helps them make more money. But, you know, what he wants to play for is a chip. And I love that about him because we deserve one and we need one. And he will help us get there.
Padres could still get draft pick compensation based on Jackson Merrill if in the next two seasons, I believe he finishes in the top three in MVP voting. That would also, because they did not manipulate his service time, the Padres would be rewarded with an extra draft pick. Probably was going to be easier to get the Rookie of the Year than top three in MVP voting, but I'm not going to put a ceiling on what Jackson Merrill can accomplish in the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, we all projected him at like 9 home runs,
right.
And he ended up hitting 24. I remember a roundtable we did. I think Craig asked us to go, or you asked us to go around and give our ceiling of home runs for Jackson Merrill at the time. I think this is probably May or June, and it was like 12. If he hits 12 homers, I'll be elated. Doubled that and, you know, certainly had a chance to hit some more, but he's a fantastic player. Really glad he's here. And, you know, Paul Skene's also a fantastic player. And one will be with his team. One will be traded within the next 4 to 5 years.
Skene's is also up for the Cy Young Award, which will be announced tomorrow. Although even Paul Skene said, no, it's going to be Chris Sale,
yeah.
Who's going to win that one, and probably rightfully so. First, we've got the Manager of the Year announcement that's coming up later today, and Padres fans will also be interested in that. Talk about that after Kelly's traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but Mike Schilt up for Manager of the Year, along with Pat Murphy and Carlos Mendoza, Brewers and Mets managers. That will be announced today, sometime between 3 and 4 o'clock, just like every other award this week on MLB Network. And I have kind of been under the assumption this whole time, Pat Murphy, the favorite, you know, for whatever reason, you know, stepping into the shoes left by Craig Counsell, who went to the Cubs, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers, not with a lesser payroll and expected to take a step back after losing Corbin Burns. The fact that they won 93 games and won their division, he's going to get a lot of credit for that. But just like the argument for A.J. Preller against Matt Arnold, who won the Executive of the Year, who did more managerial work this year than Mike Schilt?
Well, I mean, look, I'm reading this excerpt right now from MLBTradeRumors.com, and here's what it says. Here's what it says about Schilt. In his first season in San Diego, Schilt brought the Padres to a 93-win performance and then to the NLDS, where the club lost a heartbreaking 5-game series against the eventual World Series champion Dodgers. Then it says about Pat Murphy. Expectations were also somewhat limited for the Brewers in the wake of Burns being traded and Brandon Woodruff's injury and Craig Counsell's departure. Yet Pat Murphy kept the ship on course in his first year as Milwaukee's manager. the longtime Brewers bench coach, stepped into the big chair and immediately led the crew to another NL Central crown. Mike Shildt did not keep this ship on course. Mike Shildt plotted the course and got them to a 93-win season after trading the game's second-biggest superstar away and having to figure out what to do with it. I think this would be, as I think the other ones were, I think this would be kind of a travesty if he doesn't win.
I think if we're going with the ship metaphor, he didn't just plot the course. The ship had hit an iceberg the year,
100%.
The year before. He had to patch the holes. You know, he had to bail out the water that was in the hold, yep, to keep the ship from completely sinking
and rebuild the ship,
then get it back on course and get it to its destination of the playoffs at the end of the season.
Yeah, in the NL West as well. Sorry.
So like, I think, and Mike Shildt will be the first to tell you, it's about the players. How many times do we hear him say that? It's not about me. It's about the players. No one wins without players. But if we're going to give a Manager of the Year award at the end of the year, and you're going to ascribe value to what a manager does, then what does the manager do? He sets a tone, he builds a culture, he gets players to follow him. All the things that we're at least kind of assuming that a manager does, Mike Shildt did the best in the National League this year. And I don't think there's a huge argument about it. I actually think Carlos Mendoza has a better case maybe than Pat Murphy for the Manager of the Year award compared against Mike Shildt.
Kind of first-time guys. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the payroll disparity was severe between the Mets and the Padres, and the Padres and the Brewers. But you're talking about losing Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff being injured. How about Joe Musgrove being injured? How about Yu Darvish saying, I have to step away for 3 months? You know, do those things not matter? Do they not count at all in this? How about trading away Juan Soto? Does that not matter at all? Like, $92 million slashed off the top. Hey, man, go out and do your best. All right, well, here's 93 wins. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
You know, and again, if you want to argue that the manager's role is maybe not as valuable as some people make it out to be. I mean, we see plenty of managers of the year who 1 year later are out of a job.
Yeah, Skip.
Skip Schumacher is one of them. Bob Melvin didn't, you know, learn how to manage, forget how to manage, learn how to manage again, and then forget how to manage. A lot of it comes down to your players, health, things that are out of the control of the manager, whether your team succeeds or not. But, again, we're giving out this award, and we're basing it on these criteria. What Mike Shildt did was the best job managing in the National League this year.
That's correct.
Doesn't mean that he'll have a great year next year. Doesn't mean he's the best manager in baseball. It does mean that he did, of the criteria and qualities you're looking for in 2024, to me, he's the one who should win the award.
See, Michael says everyone outside San Diego expected the Padres to still make the playoffs, where the Brewers were expected to finish third in their division and miss the playoffs. I disagree. I didn't see a lot of people picking the Padres to make the playoffs.
Almost no one.
Almost nobody. I mean, here on the flagship, full of cheerleaders like us, we all had them at 500. 500. I had him at 500.
I had him in third place.
Paulie had him in third place. I didn't see a ton of that. And if I'm wrong, you know, tell me I'm wrong. I don't care. But I just think I think Shildt, you know, I think Shildt did a bang up job. And again, all the guys that left, all the guys that came, you had to create and establish a new culture, and you had to steer them through some weird stuff, man. Joe being hurt, you being out. That's two of your top pitchers right now that just said, you know, we won't be here for a while.
You had to make it work with a rookie who had never played center field.
Correct.
In center field. Not only did you make it work, had him on the cusp of a Rookie of the Year award.
Manny was hurt. Xander was hurt. Ha-Sung Kim was hurt. You had Jerks and Profar on a one-year deal, making $1 million as your starting left fielder. Tatis was hurt a bunch. Dude, you think about it. Think about all the injuries, and they just kept trucking along. The second half that they had was astounding. It was astounding. So I think he should win this one. I think he should win it going away.
I kind of agree with you here. And again, I know we have our own biases showing, but the more I think about it, it's actually more reasonable for Paul Skenes to win the Rookie of the Year award,
yes,
than it is for anyone else to win the Manager of the Year award.
Correct.
In the National League. But I'm preparing myself for the disappointment again that somehow it's going to end up being Pat Murphy,
yep,
instead of Mike Shildt.
How do we feel if it's Carlos Mendoza? Are we like, oh, okay?
I mean, there's a lot of similarities there.
Yeah.
You know, the Mets were...
I think he's the third most deserving of those three.
The Mets were a, you know, highly paid disappointment in 2023. And then, you know, fixed it and, you know, set a new course for that ship. They had the... He had the added bonus of the really slow start as well. That just kind of gives you that added pizzazz of turning the team around somewhere in the middle of the season, as like, though you made a great speech one day and that turned the entire season around for the New York Mets.
We've talked about it, I know, but why is Carlos Mendoza nominated as a Feinbergs?
Right.
Because I feel like they were very similar. Both made it to the NLCS, both had extremely high payrolls, high expectations.
It's a regular season award. The voting was done before the playoffs, so no one had any idea if Dave Roberts was going to win a World Series or get eliminated in the division series when they did the vote. So that doesn't count. Neither does the Mets run to the NLCS.
But expectations and payroll worked against Dave. They did not work against Carlos Mendoza, though.
I mean, they had a huge payroll.
Huge, yeah.
Massive.
Bigger than the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I think the Mets had the highest.
So. Right. It was lower than it was the year before. But, you know, if you're talking about which manager did a better job with a massively reduced payroll, again, Mike Schilt is the answer to that question.
Correct.
Not Carlos Mendoza, not Dave Roberts, and not
correct.
Pat Murphy.
Yeah.
So no matter how you slice and dice it up, it seems to me the argument always comes back to Mike Schilt.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm expecting the worst.
I mean, Adam Paul says the manager of the team with the best record hardly gets nominated for manager of the year. Yes, because usually the team with the best record is the one that went in with the most expectations to begin with. You have to exceed expectations to win a manager of the year award.
See, second most wins in Padres franchise history?
Correct.
I do feel like if you plucked somebody that's never played in, watched a baseball game, that they could manage a team like the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And probably win 85, 90 games.
Yeah. I know they had guys banged up, but when one guy was banged up, they have five more ready to go. You know, and Dave did a great job. He did a great job in the regular season and in the playoffs. You got to tip your hat for sure. Best playoffs he's ever had by far. But
it's not a knock on Dave. It's just a compliment. It's a fact of the state of their roster and the players on the team. You just got to, as long as you pencil in Otani, Freeman, and Betts, 1, 2, and 3.
It's pretty solid.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah. I want good rationale. If they voted for Pat Murphy, I want the writers to be able to defend it. Because if they say, well, the Brewers won their division, so I just thought that Murphy did a better job. That's not an argument.
Yeah.
They won 93 games. The Padres won 93 games in a much tougher division. That's a better job of getting to 93 than the Brewers did in an easier division. That's an argument for Mike Schilt, not an argument for Pat Murphy. So I don't want to hear, oh, I voted for Pat Murphy because the Brewers won their division. That's a terrible, terrible rationale for voting for Pat Murphy for that award.
They really had $115 million payroll? That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why Matt Arnold then won the executive of the year over A.J. Preller, who had to make tons more moves than Matt Arnold did, but hey, you know, it didn't have as much to work with, so they gave it to him. All right, well, if Matt Arnold did such a great job as the executive giving Pat Murphy this great team, then why is he also the manager?
It's an interesting one. We'll see what happens.
Basically, they just want to insult Milwaukee's players. Yeah, you know, you've got great executives.
Everybody's managers. Yeah, jeez.
How you won 93 games with the terrible players that you guys had, we have no idea. So we're going to honor everyone but your players
at
the end of this season.
Yeah, Jackson Chourio didn't get any first-place votes for Rookie of the Year. Good player.
GSDP says, yeah, Jerickson Profar needs to win Comeback Player of the Year. He already lost. It's just the string of L's that the Padres are taking here in the postseason awards.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, man.
Expect another one. Did you guys text Schilte? Good luck. I did. Get anything back yet? Oh, there it is. Thank you. It's a team award.
It's a team award.
Look at that. I hope he wins it.
I wouldn't have thought to text someone good luck on a vote that's already in and is just going to be announced.
Why not?
Because there's no luck involved.
But he... What?
He doesn't need to... You know, I'd say good luck in the upcoming game because you need some good... Like, if you're about to play a game, hey, good luck, Skip. You would like, you know, calls
like,
to go
luck,
your
I
way.
Good luck, I hope you win.
No, you know, if you...
Good luck is just a saying.
Congratulate him at the end, but he doesn't need good luck at this point. The results are already in. They can't. Not, no luck will change the results.
This is hurting
at this
point. My brain.
I don't see, he's splitting hairs here. What should I have said?
Nothing.
Why?
If he wins, you congratulate him after the fact.
Why not?
It's just like Tony says. It's just something nice to say, like, "Hey, I got your back. We're rooting for you."
We do have his back.
Well,
really, we have his back.
We're rooting for you.
I am rooting. We're rooting for. That's a good one. We're rooting for you.
Why are you rooting for him if it's already been decided?
That's true.
That's a good point too.
Morons.
Such a clown. Such a clown. You say good luck to someone before anything, before a speech, before a job interview. Luck has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. Before a speech, yeah. Good luck that it goes.
It's already written.
It's already written.
It's already been written.
It hasn't been delivered though.
Oh my God.
All right, Paulie's going to run the report, including some Juan Soto news.
Oh, boy.
Perhaps the worst news possible.
Get ready.
Just twist the knife.
Next on
Just
the fan.
Just do it.